This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Fought valiantly. Now join me and confront your fate.
You've kept him alive so that he can die at the proper moment.
Bring him to me.
Let's find out where he is. If we find him, we can end this.
I say reach out now!
Boy who lived, come to die. Only I can live forever.
Well, it sounds like it's action-packed, at the very least, the final in the Harry Potter films. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, the end, so important that they gave it two full feature-length films. And, of course, this franchise has dominated books and film for a long time. The stars of the films have become superstars from the time of their childhood, and the stories are deeply beloved by many readers. There will be a whole generation of kids who grew up on the Harry Potter books and the films that followed them. What about Christians? Should they be glad that all this sordid business of wizards and magic and Hogwarts and spells is finally over? Joining us to talk about the movie Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Pastor Charles Lehman. He's pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Accident, Maryland. He's a regular guest. Charlie, welcome back.
Great to be on.
I've known you for a long time. I take it from various communications between us that you know these books, you like these books, you're a fan. Someone might ask, how can you, a Christian pastor, be a fan of the Harry Potter books and films?
Well, the answer that I like to give to that question, which usually surprises people, is that the main reason that I'm a fan of these books is that I think that the Harry Potter series is the greatest series of Christian fiction written in the 21st century.
What do you mean?
Well, J.K. Rowling is a Christian. She's an Anglican living in England. And in 2006, she gave an interview in which she was asked how her Christian faith affected her writing of the books. And her answer was kind of cryptic. She said, well, you'll just have to wait and see how the last book goes. And what she was referring to was that the six books that came before all were building up to book seven, in which she reveals that the whole story of Harry Potter is really a story that is intentionally meant to teach us about Christ and to teach us all kinds of things that are running all through the scriptures. The reason people think that you can't be a Christian and like Harry Potter is because of the witchcraft and that sort of thing. But if you look at the prohibitions in the scriptures against witchcraft and that sort of thing, and you compare it to the sort of witchcraft that actually shows up in the Harry Potter books, you'll notice that there is almost nothing that the witchcraft that is described in the scriptures and the witchcraft in Harry Potter has in common. They're very, very different from one another. The role that witchcraft has in the Harry Potter books is kind of the same as you would have for, you know, fantastical technology in a science fiction series.
Or superpowers in all of the superhero movies that inundate us every day?
Well, sure. You know, the superpowers in X-Men, the lightsabers in Star Wars. You know, in Harry Potter, it's wands and spells. But it's the same plot elements.
Without spoiling the plot for those who haven't read the books or haven't seen the films yet to their conclusion, if you can, what is it about the final installment that kind of pulls the veil away and shows these to be, as you say, Christian fiction?
Well, I think that you can see it primarily in three characters in the final book. Harry himself, Neville, who is one of his classmates, and then one of the professors, I won't say who, unless you press me really hard on it, because that would reveal too much. But in these three characters, you see all kinds of themes that come straight from the New Testament. One is evil being defeated through death and resurrection. Another is the power of goodness being made perfect in weakness. And in the case that I think is the most clear image of Christology in the entire series, you have a person who allows himself to be seen as completely and utterly evil, both by his friends and by his enemies. And all of that is in service of his goal to give his life to protect another. And, you know, those themes in literature absolutely could not exist if we didn't have the scriptures and if God hadn't, you know, in some way kind of written these themes into the fabric of human identity so that when we want to see a good story, we want to see, you know, these themes that are epitomized in the cross but show up over and over and over again in all good literature and all good art from every culture.
So would you put the Harry Potter books and films in the same category that many have put the works of C.S. Lewis or J.R. Tolkien with not as Christian metaphors or allegories, but as stories that could not be told apart from the Christian story and are in some sense told kind of growing out of fictionally the Christian story?
That's exactly the way that I'd put it. In Lewis and Tolkien, you kind of have the two epitomes of the way that a Christian author can do this. Lewis was rather intentionally writing an allegory. And Tolkien, on the other hand, used literary allusion, but his Roman Catholic faith could not help but express itself in all the stories that he wrote about Middle Earth. And I think if you look at J.K. Rowling, though she sets her stories in something like our real world, it kind of goes, as far as those two approaches, it kind of goes in the Tolkien way, where you have a lot of literary allusion to Christian themes. Though there is some rather explicit mention of Christianity in a couple of places, and we could talk about those if you want, because those are introduced in Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Now, let's do that, because someone who's read the book will probably know exactly what you're talking about. Someone who hasn't might be stunned to hear Christianity even obliquely mentioned in these books. Where does it come in?
Well, Hermione Granger seems to be a person who is raised in a Christian home to Christian parents. There is a beautiful scene in the first part of the book, Deathly Hallows. Now, they excised a bit of this from the movie version, but basically what's happening is Hermione and Harry are in Godric's Hollow, which is where Harry was born and where his parents were killed, and they're walking through a cemetery next to a church, and in the church they can hear Christmas carols being sung because this happens on Christmas Eve, and so the service of lessons and carols is going on in the church. And they come to James and Lily Potter's grave, and there is a Bible verse inscribed there. And it's where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, from Matthew. And Hermione uses this occasion as an opportunity to talk to Harry about her Christian hope. I mean, she's rather vague about it. Hermione isn't the best theologian in the world because, you know, Rowling probably isn't either. But you do actually have a real live conversation between a Christian young woman and a guy who doesn't really know anything about the Christian faith that is inspired by the fact that Harry's parents have this Bible verse on their tombstone.
Now, I am going to press you, even though we only have about a minute before we take a break. We'll pick up on the other side. Without too many details that would spoil the party, you say there's a Christ figure in the conclusion of the Harry Potter series, and it's not the person that many people would expect it to be. Who is the Christ figure and why?
It's Professor Snape. And the reason why he, I think, is the primary Christ figure in the series is because it is revealed in the last book that everything that he's been doing for the last 7 years has been to protect Harry and to help him in his mission to defeat Voldemort. And even his killing of Dumbledore in Book 6 was part of that plan.
Now, I had heard that Snape turns out to be one of the bad guys after all. You're saying that's how it looks, but that's not how it is?
That's how it looks at the end of Book 6, and it certainly appears to be the case, even in Deathly Hallows Part 1. But no, he is the hero of the series as far as I'm concerned.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the movie Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Pastor Charles Layman is our guest.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Whether you are just starting or have played your entire life, Oak Brook Golf Club in Edwardsville is your home for golf. Our 27-hole layout, fair prices, and award-winning staff, and ever-improving course conditions make your decision easy. We have always been family-owned at Oak Brook, and golf is our business. Our PGA staff offers leagues, instruction, camps, a senior scramble, and our family special where kids play free. Oak Brook Golf Club, 618-656-5600 or oakbrookgc.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas; Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California; Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming; Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas; Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming; Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California; St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa; Redeemer Lutheran, Caucabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada; St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin; and St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, coming to you live this Monday, the 18th of July. Pastor Charles Layman is our guest, talking about the movie Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Pastor Layman is pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Accident, Maryland. I suspected because it seems to fit with the kind of the general run of the story, that your answer to the question of the Christ figure might be Severus Snape. He is depicted in the better part of the series as a nemesis to Harry Potter. Sometimes there's an act of patience or kindness, but largely he seems intolerant of this young student. You say that, is he the one you were talking about before the break who allows himself to be seen as thoroughly evil by both friends and enemies in order to save this life?
Yes. That's the thing that typifies Snape above all other things. There's a wonderful quotation by Luther that I know that you're familiar with, where Luther says that on the cross, Jesus is the chief, greatest, and only sinner. And I don't think that there's anyone in all of literature that fits that description better than Severus Snape. Because what happens is Snape, in the end of Book 6, actually kills Dumbledore, which, you know, to many people who are reading the books, just confirms what they suspected all along, that Snape really was a traitor, that he really was thoroughly evil. And he sacrifices his reputation, even among those who had trusted Dumbledore's word and believed him when Dumbledore told them that Snape was on their side. So McGonagall, all the other members of the Order of the Phoenix, they all believe that Snape is thoroughly evil. And up until that point, all of the Death Eaters, all the bad guys, have thought that Snape was a traitor to them because of his association with Dumbledore. And so, at the end, there's really no one that trusts Snape, except possibly Voldemort. But it's revealed in this movie that everything that he has done for his entire life since he was a young boy has been motivated almost completely by the love that he had for Harry's mother.
So, in the end, does, without giving too much away, does Snape live or die, or does he do both?
He dies, but as he dies, he is able to give Harry the last little bit of information that Harry needs in order to defeat Voldemort. And Snape dies knowing that he has fulfilled the task that he has, you know, given himself for the last 18 years, for all of the time since Harry's parents were killed.
What else is, I mean, that's pretty profound in and of itself, but what else is there in the defeat of this great evil? He kind of becomes the epicenter of all evil in the world, stands in very nicely for the devil in many ways, Voldemort. What else in his defeat in the final book lends credence to your theory that this is Christian fiction?
Well, the way that Voldemort is defeated has to do with, it's a very close image to what happens on the cross. When Jesus was crucified, Satan thought that he had won the ultimate victory. I've killed God, now the entire world is my oyster, you know, everything's going to go my way. That was kind of Satan's thinking. And Voldemort, all through the series, knows that there is one thing that he must do in order to reign supreme over the wizarding world, and that is to kill Harry Potter. And when Voldemort does that, he thinks that he's won, but it actually is what leads to his ultimate defeat.
So let's talk about a Christian approaching these for perhaps the first time. They have been wildly popular and read by many, Christian and non-Christian, but I imagine there are many among our listeners who haven't touched them, not one of the books, because of the subject matter that they think is in there and the message they think it sends. What pastoral advice would you give to someone who says, well, I don't know, I've read the other greats of the Christian fiction that were mentioned here before. Maybe I should read these. What would you say?
I'd say give them a chance. I haven't done it yet, but I intend to. I think reading the entire series again would be a very interesting thing, because I think that what I would find is that a lot of the themes that Rowling reveals in Book 7 actually are woven all the way through. I've thought about that rather extensively where the character of Snape is concerned. And, you know, I think that the way that Rowling portrays him is absolutely consistent, starting even in the first book. And I think that if one were to do that, if one were to go into the books knowing something about the Christological themes that are there, that they would probably jump out at them, even starting in the very early books, because Rowling did a lot of preliminary work in the first few books that comes to fruition later on. And we do know that, for example, there's a scene in Deathly Hallows Part 2 that takes place at King's Cross Station that Rowling has said was one of the first scenes in the entire series that she ever wrote. You know, for those who have read the book or seen the movie, you know that the King's Cross Station scene is one that she could not have written at the beginning if she didn't know the way the whole story was going to go.
Then someone says, I don't know if I can get past, I understand what you're saying, that these are plot elements, that this is something that moves the story along, makes possible the telling of this story. And it's not a story about magic. It's not a story that encourages the practice of unbiblical sorcery or magical arts. But it's difficult for me to get past that. What would you say pastorally to such a person?
Well, I wouldn't want to push them too hard on that. I mean, the concern that they're expressing is not a bad concern. I mean, it's really good for us to bear in mind what the scriptures say about sorcery and witchcraft and necromancy and all these other things, and to be careful, even when we're approaching art, to not, you know, push the boundaries on those commands. And so if someone, you know, after they heard me talking about this, thought, well, I'm still not comfortable with it, that's okay. They don't, I mean, you don't have to read every book or watch every movie that someone else likes. I wouldn't urge anyone to go against their conscience on that.
You have a little baby daughter, and as I said at the beginning, I know you're a fan. If you were like me, you waited for the time when you could share your favorite literature with your kids by reading it to them or having them read it. When is that going to be, and in what context for your daughter?
Well, a little bit of it depends on, you know, what she's reading when I think that she's old enough to grab these books. My preference would be to simply give her the books and let her read them. I'm not going to let her read all seven in a row in the course of a couple of months. When I started reading these books about 11 years ago, they started being published in 97, but I didn't get into them until about 2000. But when I started reading them then, a friend of mine told me that he thought that each of the books was age-appropriate for anyone who was Harry's age. And I really think he was right. And I think that that general rule holds true throughout the books. In book four, they take a decidedly darker turn. It's possible that for some kids they might be ready for him when they're a couple years younger than Harry is in that particular book.
About 20 seconds.
But I think as a general rule, if your child is as old as Harry in that particular book, then your child is probably old enough to read that book, watch that movie.
Pastor Charles Lehman is pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Accident, Maryland. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Have a great afternoon.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be talking about the International House of Prayer in Kansas City. They require their staff to spend at least 25 hours a week. That's a lot of time, by the way, in prayer, in a room, and engaged in weekly fasts. I wonder, is the International House of Prayer a cult? We'll be answering that question tomorrow on Issues Etc. Bob Lico will join us. We'll talk about the teachings of Mike Bickle and the International House of Prayer tomorrow on Issues Etc. Great art imitates life. Real life is the story of God come in the flesh, Jesus Christ, making the sacrifice for our sins. Shouldn't surprise us if great art, books and film, imitate it. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.